going to work as I wanted, but that's fine. I have plenty of demos. This session is all about demos, really. Before I start with the demos and get into the cool stuff and the fun stuff and the toys, I'll have a little bit of a conversation, think a little bit more about what is happening in the world at the moment with more personal computers, and what does that actually mean? What is a more personal computer? Some of you may have heard this phrase, more personal computer. Satya, CEO of Microsoft, has used it a couple of times. And it's not about there being more, i.e. a higher volume of personal computers in the world. If that's what you think this session is about, you're in the wrong room. This is about computers being more personal for us. This is about how we build software that is contextually smarter and therefore more personal and more engaging and more exciting, really, in many ways. This is a quote from William Gibson. How many people here know who William Gibson is? Yeah, amazing sci-fi author. He has kind of, predicted some futures, and some of it's not so nice and some of it's kind of cool. But one of the things he said is the future's already here. It's just not very evenly distributed. And I think that's very true. And I think that's something that we need to remind ourselves a lot as we sit in our little, geek caves, nerding out with all the latest toys, that we could be multiple years ahead of everyone else. And I think what's happened over the last 50 years is, pretty incredible in terms of where we've got to with computers. But in many ways, everything I'm going to show you today is really not new at all. Although everyone will probably go away going, wow, that was cool, that was new stuff. It's really not that new. So a good way to look at it from my perspective is to think about some of the things I've worked on and think, well, how do they apply to what I'm going to show you today? So actually, not on this list, right at the beginning of the 90s, I worked on 3D Worlds, a project to create a mapping between what's on your file system, which sounds really weird, and a 3D world that you could navigate in 3D, kind of virtual reality, if you like, your file system. And that's kind of important. We'll come back to that later. But then I worked on location tracking both people and vehicles. I worked on smartphones in 99. I thought, wow, this is so cool. People are going to have email and web access in their pockets. And nobody cared about it for 10 years. That's the reality. It took 10 years for that to become really mainstream. I worked on tablet PC team with Microsoft in 2002. I thought, yeah, everyone's just going to be writing with a stylus on their device. We're still not quite there. Of course, now Apple has invented the stylus, so we can all be comfortable knowing that we will all be writing with a stylus. I worked on online mapping, Virtual Earth project, some of you may know. And that was, at the time considered groundbreaking, but it really wasn't. I'd worked on mapping systems in the early 90s too. It was just taking it to a different platform. It was just exposing it in a different way. And then really from 2006 onwards, I've been working on multi-user interaction. So how do multiple people engage in the same space at the same time with technology? Started with the Surface tables and then moved into technologies like Kinect and other sensor technologies. So all of these things really culminate into what I'm going to talk about today. And a good way to think about what I just said in terms of, nothing's really new, is what Bill Buxton calls the long nose of innovation. And to put it into perspective, Bill worked on, he's a Microsoft researcher, he worked on touch interfaces, touch screens and touch interfaces at Toronto University the same year that the Macintosh shipped. And he wasn't the first person to be doing that. And now we're all going, oh, the new interface is a touch interface. Well, yeah, it's the new old interface. It's not really that new. So let's think about interfaces and how those help computers become more personal. If you think about the fact that now a huge number of people carry their computer around in their pocket, that's pretty personal. There's surveys that show that large quantities, large percentages of people take their computer into the toilet with them, take their computer to bed with them, and I'm talking about their pocket computer, what we call a phone nowadays. And it's kind of funny when you think about that, you know, when I started working on smartphones, they were pocket PCs, they were, you know, Palm Pilots, or, you know, there were a number of different words for them. We didn't just call it a phone, but that's essentially what it is. But now when you think about your phone, it's really not a phone at all. In fact, that's almost a minimal function for most people on their phone. They use it for a whole heap of other things, and the phone is kind of almost the least used function. So computers are definitely becoming more personal. We're getting computers that we're wearing now. How many people are wearing a computer right now on their wrist, for example? Not many. So you haven't got a Fitbit, you haven't got a smartwatch. You know, these kind of computers are computers that we're wearing on our bodies. This is pretty personal. We're seeing computers that we're going to wear on our face. Google has tried it. Microsoft is trying it. Clearly Facebook and Oculus are trying it. Computers that you wear on your face are pretty personal. There's an interesting thing that happens, though, when computers get more personal. And that is that they change the social contracts of how people engage with each other. And this is something to think about. Like, if you think about when you get on public transport nowadays, or you go into a cafe or a bar or a restaurant, people are not talking to each other. They're doing this. That's just a weird thing. So computers, in some ways, although they've become more personal, they've become our kind of attached devices. They've actually broken the way we engage with each other. And that's a challenge that needs to be solved, and something that I spend quite a lot of time thinking about. So let's think about the things that we have available to us that make computers more personal. Well, these are the inputs on the left-hand side. We can track where people are looking. We can see the direction of the head. We have camera systems now built into computers, and a lot of new computers that are shipping now and next year, I've got the Surface Book here, but Lenovo is doing it, Asus is doing it, Acer is doing it. Cameras on the laptop that is tracking you, and they're coming to phones as well. They're going to be able to see when you're looking at the phone. This is interesting. What can we do with that? Let's think about that a little bit. Then gesture. What can we do with gestures? So not just kind of the touch gestures and the pinch and zoom that we all know and love from, you know, our phones, but all kinds of other gestures that are going to start coming into play as there are vision systems that are watching us, that are attached to us. And actually, one of the demos I'll show you is you don't even need a vision system to be able to do gestures. And so you can use other technology that's around you or on you in order to detect gestures. And that's something that may change the way we interface and interact with our computers. Ink is almost one of the most basic ways that we communicate with each other. If you think about how kids start communicating, they draw, they scribble, usually with crayons on your walls. But they're sharing their ideas and they're sharing with each other. And if you think about how we have scribbled on cave walls and, you know, this is an ancient way of communicating, an ancient way of sharing information, sharing stories. And so enabling us to ink in a natural way, to draw in a natural way on our screens or in digital format is a very valuable input mechanism. And the other one that's supernatural is speech. We are now at a point where, and it's, again, nothing new. We had speech on Windows in like 95. But we have speech that's getting better and better. Incrementally, every year, every few months, we improve. Not just Microsoft, but everyone is working on this. Because we know that talking to the computer is a smart thing to be able to do. In fact, how many people have heard of the Amazon Echo? Few of you. It's a little cylindrical device. It has no screen, no USB ports. It has no way of communicating except through voice in and voice out. You buy it for $150 or $200. you put it in your house and you talk to it, and you can get it to play music, you can get it to tell you what the traffic's like, you can get to tell you what the weather's like, you can get it to read out recipes to you as you're cooking. It's a home computer whose entire interaction is through speech. Of course, most of you have probably used things like Cortana or Siri or Google Now. This is all speech interfaces too, and if you drive and you use your phone in your car, hopefully you're using a speech interface there and you're not sitting in your car doing this, but you're actually engaged with the driving bit while you're talking. And then the final input that I think is becoming really important is identity. And this is a hard problem to solve, or has been a hard problem to solve, but we're getting better at it by leaps and bounds now, thanks to knowledge-based systems and machine learning. The interesting thing about us as human beings is when my brother comes up to me and says, "Hey, bro, how's it going?" I don't have to say, "Oh, hold on a minute, can you show me your driver's license and your passport? I need to check it's you." But when you go to a computer that you've been using for the last 6 months, you have to do that every time. Why does the computer not know that it's me? Is it stupid? Well, yeah, up until now it has been pretty stupid. And so to be able to have the technology identify the difference between different people using biometrics, whether it's facial recognition, fingerprints, iris scans, there's a number of technologies that are coming online and already available. That will mean that your computer will know that you are there. Your phone will know that it's you and not anyone else. And when you hand your phone to someone else, it will automatically lock. When someone else grabs your phone, it's going to be useless to them. These are technologies that already exist and are being built into hardware right now. What we need to do is, how many people here are software guys? Okay, you're in the right room, I'm in the right room, it's good. What we need to do is think about how do we build software to take advantage of this. And that's the meat of this talk, is what are we going to do that. So let's think just quickly about the outputs. Of course, text, we all know that. We've been doing that forever and it's pretty boring. I'm going to skip over holograms and come back to that in a minute because that's probably what everyone's in here for. Audio, of course, is important, both in terms of speech and being able to talk to the people that you're engaging with, your customers, your users. I hate the term users. Users take drugs, right? But the people that are your customers that are tangible. We can put tangible output, things that are touchable, things that are gesturable. We can interact with these objects in an interesting way. And the other thing that I think is happening more and more is we're creating output from our computers that's emotional. I have purchased a couple of devices recently, the Echo actually being one of them, that has a persona. And so you talk to it, and very quickly within my home, she helped me do something. Echo, whose name is Alexa, you can give it various names, but we called it Alexa. And so you ask Alexa to do things, and Alexa does things for you. And then the people in my house have been telling me that she is really good. She is helping me do this. She has a personality. I asked Alexa to help me with my homework, and she helped me. So we're creating emotional attachment and engagement between the devices and the software that we're building and our customers. And that's incredibly valuable, and that's actually how you get more stickiness than anything else. That's how people, you know, because you don't want to lose a friend. And if you've made a friend inside your computer, you're going to keep that person. So let's drill into these a little bit more and talk a little bit about what we can do with these things, and then we'll get into some demos. So gaze, we can track, well, we do have sensors that can track eye position, but we can also just track head position. And often that's good enough to know if someone is looking at a screen or looking away, in order to trigger interactions that appear seamless. As you walk in front of your computer, something happens. And then sensors that track what's happening in the environment and enabling Windows to recognize different gestures. And what we start to see happening is some applications are taking advantage of this, but I suspect what will happen is a lot of this will start going down to the operating system. And this is already happening with speech. So if you think about speech, Cortana is now in the operating system in Windows 10. And that means not just on phone, but on desktop, on laptop, it's everywhere. And it gives you this set of features to enable you to interact purely through speech with your computer. And the great thing about it is, like it always has been, the more you use it, the better it gets. So it starts learning your strangeness about your voice and et cetera, and it gets better, and you can train it. You can get it a head start, train it. And that's always been the case. It's just now we've surfaced it, or Microsoft has surfaced it into the operating system level, which is cool, but actually it's only just the beginning, because the promise is that it's a personal assistant for each and every one of us that's personal. It learns about the things we like and dislike. It has access to our calendar. It has access to where we work and, you know, where we live. And it starts to learn, hey, hold on a minute, don't go home yet. There's a massive smash on the freeway. Wait 10 minutes for them to clear it out. You'll actually be in a better mood when you get home. And it'll start telling you these kind of things. In fact, I'm already starting to see these kind of things emerge in some interfaces. And these things will transform our behaviors as customers, as people using the software. And we'll be able to start using these behaviors that are being identified as well to create recommendations for the people that are interacting with it. Again, another thing that's happened and emerged and built into the operating system now is Windows Hello. Windows Hello enables us to really just engage with the computer without having to log in, without needing a password. See if this machine is up and running. For some reason it's gone to sleep. Here we go. Oh, now it logs in because it saw me straight away. I have to try and get it to log out. Let's try this. So, it's looking for me, and as I come towards it, it sees me, and it logs me in. I haven't touched the keyboard. I'm straight in there. This is built into the operating system now. This is using face recognition and tracking me. Now, you can use fingerprints, and there's already fingerprint readers out in the market that you can plug into, and you can use iris scans as well if you want to feel like you're in some, you know, sci-fi movie, Mission Impossible or something. What's great about it is really convenient. Just using this Surface Book for a month, I've totally, like, fallen in love with this ability to not have to care about what my password is and just log straight in. I'll talk a little bit about how it works, but it is enterprise-level security ready. We don't actually share any of this stuff. We don't share your biometric data anywhere outside of that box. It stays on that box. It creates a certificate on that box. What's interesting about it is possibly one of the challenges that it presents is as you start getting more devices that use Windows Hello or use this biometric data, you're going to have to create profiles on each one. Those profiles are not shared. Now, that's actually a good thing in security terms, but maybe it's something that's a little bit painful in terms of your usage. So, my phone and my laptop will have a different set of credentials. And this changes the way you think about how you're building the back end to your software. Because in the past, when you just had a username and password, you don't care what device that person is coming from. Whereas now, we're actually going to tell you what the device is, which is actually more secure when you think about it, but the device is part of the identification. So every user that has more than one device is going to have multiple entries, and you're going to have to associate those different entries with the same user ID. Of course, talked about this already, but it's plugged into the OS, and it's plugged into a bunch of services already that are ready to go. Now, when I put all these different things that we're talking about together, really what we're talking about is the whole Windows 10 family of devices. Everything from, you know, wearable type devices through to carryable devices, through to desktop devices, through to lounge room devices, through to your living room device. In fact, how many people here have an Xbox One with a Kinect? A few of you. So you've already experienced some of this technology. You've been a preview customer, you didn't realize it. Because the Xbox One with Kinect already has this identification system where it starts identifying you and giving you different recommendations based on who it's seeing in front of the screen and changing the input panel based on who it's seeing in front of the screen as well. It would be remiss not to talk about Kinect, but really this conversation right now is about sensors and software, but Kinect does kind of lead the curve on much of this. Because what Kinect did, and it's amazing to think that the first Kinect was previewed 5 years ago. It doesn't feel like that long, but it's a camera that can see in 3D. It's that 3D camera type of technology that lets us do facial recognition that means if you take a picture of me and put it in front of my computer, it won't recognize it because it's not 3D. You have to have a 3D model in order for the face recognition to work. It's also a traditional video camera, HD camera, which of course you want. But one of the other things Kinect did very early on was bring in a multi-directional microphone array to the computer. And by doing that, you start being able to detect, well, where is that sound coming from? And change your interface, potentially, to direct towards where you see the person or hear things, hear noises coming from. And with Kinect, if you want to get into it, you can get into it now. You can buy a Kinect for Xbox One and an adapter kit, and you can plug it into your PC and start doing all these things now. See, all the things that, you know, even that Windows Hello thing that I showed you is going to become available just using Kinect. So once you've got all these kind of cool technologies in play, all these different inputs, what can you do? Well, there's a number of different things that you should be thinking about doing. The first thing is your application should be much more personal. You should start to understand the people and the environment that you are engaged in. You can start to know, are they standing up? Are they sitting down? You can determine the difference between how many people are in a space. One person's different experience to five people in the space. And you can enable those people to interact with the screen, with the computer in different ways. And like I said, might not even have a screen. In many cases, it probably won't going forward. With V2 of the Kinect, there was a bunch of improvements in terms of the ability to scan much more detailed information and create much more detailed 3D models. And we're seeing this now, technology getting passed into other kinds of devices. So what markets does this apply to? Well, my question is, what markets does it not apply to? Like, their experience is being built out now in retail for sure. In fact, I'll demo a retail experience shortly. There's experiences in manufacturing that we're seeing where people are engaged with machines without having to touch them or getting notifications, audio notifications from computers about different things that are happening within manufacturing. Healthcare is a great place to not want to touch things, not have a keyboard which needs sanitation. Entertainment space is obvious, and that's already shipping products left, right, and center with things like Xbox. And education and training, and not just young childhood education, but also adult education and training in the workplace are areas where this kind of engagement gets more interesting. So where does this thing come into play? Why does this thing come into play? Well, this thing is almost a culmination of every single sensor we've talked about sat on your head. So It has lenses that you can look through. It has sound that's spatially aware. It has sensors that are detecting the environment that it's in, both audio and visual sensors. It has what we're calling the holographic processing unit, HPU, which enables us to generate very quickly real-time holograms in the space that you're in. And it's totally self-contained. Not sure why the video didn't play, but anyway, they scrubbed the video out of that one. Before I get into demos, which is about to happen, I just want you to think that and remind you that if you think about all these technologies, and this is kind of the sales pitch slide, Microsoft has really pulled, over the last 20 years, a bunch of these technologies together. Microsoft has been leading the curve on a lot of these technologies, in fact, most of these technologies, for a long time. And so what can we do with them? So let's start looking and seeing what we can actually write code to do in Windows 10 now. And so let's just run this to start with. This is a little application that is using Passport or Windows Hello. Do not confuse this with the old Passport. Microsoft is really good at reusing brand names. So if you're looking for how does Microsoft Passport work, which is the new authentication mechanism, and you find an article that's over a year old, that's the old Passport. The new Passport is the PIN authentication that's in Windows 10 and beyond. And when you have Passport, you can register with Passport. You need something to identify you as you, so I'll give it something to identify as me, and I'll register. And then it comes up automatically saying, how do you want to log in future? So this is a little application that I've written. I want to log in using my face. It knows that it's me. So I click OK, and it's going to scan me, see me. If I go back to the user list and I click on my name, it takes me straight in because it sees me in front of the screen. So it knows I'm logged in. I'm already authenticated. We can go back to the user list, add another user. And again, it sees that it's me. Now, what kind of scenario would you want this in? Well, if you use Twitter, you might have more than one Twitter account, but they're both you. So why not have, so now it's not detecting me, can't recognize me. Can you recognize me now? Can you see me now? It can also use a PIN, but let's try this again. And it's got me, and I'm logged in. And go back to the user list, and now I've got two accounts, but with the same credentials, the credentials being my face. And whichever one I pick, it logs me straight in because it sees me there in front of the screen. So how does this work? Well, Microsoft has, of course, because that's what they do, made things really easy for us. In Windows 10, there's a thing called a Key Credential Manager. The first thing you need to do is check whether the device is going to support that. So you can check, is Key Credential Manager, is it supported? If it's not, then you need to tell the user that it's not set up, and you could roll back to an old password type system. Of course, we don't want that. We want them to engage, but we're very aware, everyone's aware, this is not an immediate thing. Not everyone's going to have devices that have credentials available. So there is another way of using it, which I didn't show you, which is the PIN. So even if you don't have a sensor that can detect you, I could register, and just use a PIN. And then I can type a PIN number. Now you might think, well, how can a PIN number be more secure than a password? Well, it's more secure because it's not actually shared outside of this computer. That PIN number doesn't get sent to your back-end servers or anywhere. It just creates a certificate locally that is then used to authenticate you. So it is quite possible now that you start to get a larger number of users and you won't need, I'll come back to remove in a minute, you won't need them to have passwords. And in fact, that's the vision. the vision of this technology is that we just don't have passwords in 5 years' time, because passwords are one of the biggest pains and biggest security flaws that are out there. So if we can get rid of them, that would be great. So how do you create a set of credentials? You just request that you create using an account ID, and all the magic is done for you behind the scenes in the operating system. And here we're just saying, if there's one already there, replace it. And then it makes this credential key, and that gives you time to then go and do something there. These samples will get shared with you shortly. I'm not entirely sure what the channel will be, probably through MSDN or coding samples online or something like that. You can also see here that you can get other statuses that can come back. It's cancelled or not found. How do you remove a user? Well, again, pretty simple. You open the key credential manager. You call open using the account username, the ID that the user gave you, and you simply call delete, and that removes them from the system. It deletes the key, it removes them, and of course, you would probably want to do something on your server at that time as well. And then this is how they log in. So you basically open and you find out whether you've got them to log in, and then you can say yes, or they don't exist, and then you say no. And so it's a very small class of code that I have here that's doing all this good stuff, and hiding from me as a developer all the dirty details of how I should care about, or what I should care about in terms of the interaction between the person, whether they're using face, whether they're using fingerprint, whether they're using iris scan, whether they're using a PIN. I actually don't know as a developer, and I don't care. That's between the customer and their device, and that's where it's kept. All I get as a developer is a credential key that I can share with my backend server that identifies that person as that person and validates that they have signed in correctly. That's all I need. Okay, so what's this demo? This is another demo that I'm going to show. This is a retail demo that demonstrates how using machine learning technologies is enabling us to do some pretty cool things. How many people have seen howold.net? Okay, maybe half of you, maybe a bit more. Well, what we've done here is turned it into a retail experience. So you can walk into a retail store and it can start tracking you, and well, here it's just a bit of fun, but I can get it to take a picture of me. I'm ready, and get it to take a picture of me. I have to be really miserable when you take a picture, because apparently if you smile, it makes you look older. So we have all these hints and tips as to what makes you look old, and I failed on this one. But what makes you look old and what makes you look young through looking through the machine learning system that we have. And you can see here it's detected my face, and it's given me an age, which is great. And I don't like it, but anyway, that's fine. I can actually say here, you can see on the screen, I can say I don't like it. And I can say, no, I'm way younger than that. This is actually providing feedback back into the system so that it can readjust, and as it will get better and better over time. And then I can share it. I can also do some fun things with this. I can create an ID card, a fake ID card for myself. And of course, you have to ask permission before you share, but we enable sharing on Facebook. We actually also enable sharing on a big screen that's within. So this is running in the Sydney retail store, Microsoft retail store in Sydney. We enable sharing on a big screen that's on Pitt Street, kind of Times Square style screen, or a QR code. But what we're doing here is we're really just using Azure Machine Learning, Project Oxford technology. Thank you, little robot. To do facial recognition and age detection or guesstimation and returning that back to the customer. Now, you think about how that applies in a retail experience and the kind of things you can do in retail that will open up multiple avenues. You could start suggesting products to people as they walk past. Everyone's seen that Minority Report where he gets his eyeballs changed and he walks into a store and it greets him and offers him something that whoever's eyeballs he has would have liked. That kind of thing is becoming real. We're starting to be able to detect people moving in and out of environments. I went to Microsoft has a what's called a Retail Experience Center in Redmond, and I was there a couple of weeks ago, and it is full of tracking devices. Like, if you think retail is the great place to track where customers are moving in and out and what they're doing, and who are your customers? What gender is your customer? Are they happy? Are they sad? That's the demo I can't do. The reality is that being able to know the emotional state of your customer can help you as well, because if you've got a bunch of sad people coming in, maybe you need to do something about that. I was going to do a demo on Cortana, but something about the network is not enabling. Cortana is, again, cloud-hosted, of course. You're speaking to a server. Everyone has probably seen Cortana, where you can just start asking it questions. Hey Cortana, what's the weather like in Sydney today?
The forecast in Sydney shows sun with a high of 40 and a low of 18.
It's warmer than here, guys. Wow. But what you can do with Cortana is you can modify it. But in order to modify it, you need a cloud service that can punch back to your device. And the network here won't let me do that. I just didn't have time to set it up. But this is technology you can build. In fact, why don't I just quickly show you the code so that you get an idea of what it does. This is a little app called Best Friend, because when you're a programmer, you don't have many friends. So you create your own virtual best friends. What this program does is it installs itself and attaches itself to a Cortana. And the way you do that is using a voice command definition file. And it's really just an XML file that you register with Cortana or with the operating system. And then when you start talking to Cortana, it will have an extra set of commands that will run your application, so the code in your application rather than Cortana code. And this lets you extend Cortana's capabilities. So, you can just ask it to start talking. You can ask it, ask it questions, ask it where you want to go, things like that. Unfortunately, it's not working. But if someone wants to play around with it, that code is actually all on GitHub. And however we're sharing the slides, I'll make sure that the link to that goes out. So you can play with it yourself. So what's this demo? Oh, yes, this demo. So the next demo I want to do is one that uses stylus, and you start thinking about, okay, how do you scribble on things, and what does it mean to scribble on things? So it's actually one of the most natural things you can do is scribbling. So you take a photo and you want to annotate it. So I've straight away got pen annotation. And the code to write to make this work, and it uses Eraser out of the box as well. The code to make this work is just so stupidly simple. So this is all code about setting up the camera. To make this work, you just create an ink canvas. That's it. And you get all that inking stuff starts happening. But of course, you probably want more than that. So let's add just a couple of colored rectangles to the screen. Just uncomment that code, run it up again, so that I can change ink properties. And again, we'll just pick a camera, take a photo, change the property. And what you'll see here is I'm getting this, getting this beautiful flowing ink that just is just working. So quick sneak at the code behind that. So here I'm just creating some ink drawing attributes, setting up some properties of them, and then on that drawing canvas, there's an ink presenter object, and I update the attributes to the new attributes that I just created. So again, very simple. The problem is that, of course, that means you have to write code, and we all know that developers don't like writing code. So what Microsoft has provided for us is an ink toolbar that does all of this. So let me run up the ink toolbar. And the ink toolbar is a control that you can get, and you can see it straight away there. Take a photo. I can pick different pen thicknesses, I can pick different colors, and I can start drawing. I can have a highlighter, I can erase. It also, of course, supports using the pen erase, turning the pen around and erasing. And so if anyone has played with ink in Edge, they'll probably recognize this toolbar. Very similar to the toolbar that's in Edge. If I go here and I want to start inking, I can ink directly on a web page, and you will recognize the toolbar. Looks very, very similar. As before. So this kind of stuff should start being stuff that you build into all of your applications. Capabilities from the ground up. There's no reason not to support inking. It's a very natural way of interacting with computers, and it does make it start to feel more personal. I take a lot of notes on OneNote, one of my favorite applications, just handwritten. So yeah, you don't really need any code behind. You have an ink canvas and you have an ink toolbar. Of course, you're probably going to want to save that ink. Ink is created as a collection of strokes, and you just can serialize those strokes to a file, and you can save them. You can also do things and start to get smart with it, so you can do things where you're starting to interpret the ink and get handwriting recognition built into it. Okay, next demo. So the next thing I want to talk about is actually bigger sensors. So sensing, you know, camera-type sensors, Kinect-type sensors. Let's just have a little conversation around that. So this is a sensor device. It's like a mini Kinect, if you like. It's by a company called Orbeck out of China. $100, $150, pretty cheap. It just doesn't even require power, this one. It's USB powered only. And it's a 3D camera, color camera, IR camera, does everything you need to detect and create 3D models of what's in your space. And detect skeletons and start to track you and the people around you and be able to do fun things with that. So, you know, what kind of fun things would you want to do with when you have this kind of technology? Well, let's have a think about it. Well, one of the things you want to be able to do is obviously control your music just using your hand, right? So you want it to stop, you want it to start again, you want it to stop. You want it to stop. 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 Very simple little application, but it's just tracking my hand. Let's have a look at the code that makes that happen. You can see it's a hacked together solution. I built it in like, I don't know, an hour and a half. First thing you'll notice is it is C. There is a C# library, but I'm an old guy. So I'm just doing some co-initialize stuff to get it up and running to start with. And this is really all just about getting the media player running, and I don't care about all the security stuff right now, so I just commented it out. And then this device is called an Astra, and then in order to use it, I just call Astra initialize, and I start streaming information out of the sensor. I just want a default sensor that's attached. I only have one sensor attached to my computer, so I'll take the default one, and I'll start reading out the data. And the thing that I'm really was interested in for this sample is a hand stream, so my hand direction or movement, and being able to utilize that to create some kind of interaction with the software. And the way I'm doing that, if we have a look at the hand stream, is pretty simple, really. I'm getting a set of hand points. I'm seeing how many hands there are attached or in view. And then I'm using those hand points to determine what the position, the depth position of my hand is, And if it's above a certain height, then I just stop the player, the media control. And if it's below a certain height, I just keep playing it. So it's pretty simple. But what this is doing is giving you an idea of the kind of things that, like, this kind of technology is going to start getting built into the laptops. It's going to start getting built into the phones. Start thinking about gestural control for devices using vision. Because vision is a great, using 3D vision really, is a great way of detecting what's going on in a space and being able to interact with it and change the environment based on how people are interacting. And that's pretty personal. I do have one other demo that I really want to show you. I'm actually just going to switch that screen back into demo time. If we can switch the audio back to my phone. So this is a demo that really, I started thinking, well, that's great when you have a vision system, but, you know, cameras are a little bit obtrusive sometimes, and they're a little bit, you know, you're not always in an environment when there's cameras that are tracking you, or you might be on the go. So what other ways do you have of detecting gestures? So the other way you have of detecting gestures is really through things that you're wearing, devices that are attached to you. And so I'm playing some music now, but I want it to stop, or I can play it again. And now you really can be Tony Stark for a couple of $100. I'm just using my band and the accelerometer on my band to talk to my phone and tell it to stop or to play. And so you start thinking, stop. You start thinking about the things you can do with the technology that's already there. And again, that was a real simple little hack. Like, it was less than an hour of coding to make that happen. Just pulling the data off this. It's already paired. It's already a Bluetooth-attached device. And the other thing that's interesting to me about this is, some of you may, the eagle eyes amongst you may have noticed, this isn't a Microsoft device. Who cares, right? This is a Microsoft device which enables me to do this demo here, but again, I don't really care. The real core point here is that we're enabling a much richer engagement between the person and the software, between the person and the system. We're creating a more personal attachment. And we're creating things that are emotionally engaging. Having gestures that control your music, having gestures that control your software, that can be fun. Like I just demoed, that was a bit of fun. That's cool, right? That's emotionally engaging. That is getting your customers going, hey, check this out. I bet they'll tell everyone about it. That virally spreads your solutions and gets people using your technology in ways that they probably hadn't thought about before, in ways that they hadn't engaged in, even thinking that that was possible. How many people here thought that they could use like a band to control their music player without having to touch it, right? How many people here have thought about like engaging with computers just by looking at them or just by talking to them? How many people here have software right now that you could change, you could adjust to be inkable, so people can scribble on it and make notes and share ideas based on what's on the screen right now? Even if your software is like reporting software or enterprise software, the ability to be able to grab that data, scribble on it, annotate it, share it, incredibly valuable and very personal. Sending someone a handwritten note is much more personal than sending someone a typed out note. Sending someone handwritten annotations to content is more personal than typing it out or writing a report on it. And then doing it together in the same space at the same time is also a different way of interacting. And this changes the models and the modes of interaction. So this takes me to another part of the conversation, which is really thinking about modality. Because if your software has various modes that it operates in, how do people get between those modes? So think about pen again as an example. Most devices that support pen input now support touch as well. And so what does it mean to be able to draw on the screen versus touch the screen? Why can't I put my pen down and move the paper to create a pattern? These are all things that are technically possible now. And so your modality of interaction, you don't necessarily go into stylus mode and then into touch mode and then into keyboard mode. They should all be available all the time depending on the proximity or the interaction that's occurring. So as my pen, these active styluses, you know that it's coming into range. You actually get a message in your software saying, stylus coming into range. When I walk in front of my computer knows that I've come into range. It can see me, and it can change the interface that it presents to me, not just logging in, but doing something else. The Lenovo devices that are coming out have RealSense cameras in them, and they're going to be able to support you building software that's doing things that is very Kinect-like, using these kind of camera sets to have full 3D vision in your environment on a laptop. And like I said, this kind of stuff is coming on phones. So how are you going to adjust your software to take advantage of that? How are you going to adjust your experiences? And at the end of the day, that's what a lot of this is going to be about. It's going to be about adjusting the experience that you're creating. So the final piece of this, I guess, is to start thinking about, you know, the thing that everyone puts on their head, right? The head computer. What I call the unicorn, because it's a great piece of technology, but it's not available. It's like a fantasy for most people, the HoloLens. And that technology, like I said earlier, is a culmination of all these different things. It has multiple sensors attached to it, and it can create an engaging environment within the environment that you're in. So unlike VR headsets that are basically creating a total virtual illusionary space you're in. The HoloLens, you see through the lenses, you see the environment that you're in, and then you're augmenting it. And so we're calling it a mixed reality. And you're augmenting it with 3D objects. So if you want to get into thinking about utilizing that technology, the first thing you're going to need to do is learn how to be a 3D programmer. So if you're a XAML guy, if you're a C-sharp guy, if you're a Forms guy, we don't really have a great way of putting 3D objects in a space using that. Now, you can put 2D objects. So, in fact, any Windows 10 application will work on HoloLens, but it will be just as a 2D window within the space. But if you want a real 3D rich environment, engaging environment, you're going to need to learn how to build using 3D. And there's two avenues that you can take for this right now. One is you become a DirectX programmer, and that's hardcore. Some of you may already be in that space. Or you learn Unity, and that's so easy it's almost laughable. And Unity is a great tool set to start getting 3D objects appearing in a space. And there's a Unity toolkit for HoloLens. So if you want to start getting into creating these virtual environments that are super personal and super attached to people, that's how you're going to start doing it, is in Unity. If you were hoping for a HoloLens demo, I'm not allowed to do that. HoloLens is not allowed outside of North America right now as a product. But I'm sure you've all seen the videos. And you know, did anyone actually get to the US to play with it at Build? Is there anyone here? No? Okay. But yeah, right now, that will change. But right now, as a product, it's US only. It's actually not a product. It will become a developer preview early next year in US only, or North America only, and then it will slowly extend out. So that's pretty much all I've got to talk about and demo, and you've seen some cool stuff there, hopefully. Any questions? I've got 5-10 minutes, I can take some questions. Yeah, down the front here.
The speech to text.
Yep.
Is that going to come on board our local devices? Like with your demo there, you lost contact with your power.
Yeah. So I think the question is, speech to text, is that something that is going to become local? So you have like a speech recognition engine locally. Yes, it already is. It just wasn't the demo I wanted to give because I wanted to give a cloud demo that showed an engine running in the cloud that is learning from lots of people talking to it. So you can already get, Microsoft has a speech technology that you can load that's local to Windows. And then you can do local only speech to text. So that already exists. It has existed for like 10 years, yes.
I just want to know if there's any plans to bring something like Windows Hello to the web platform. So people
yes.
Using your face.
Yes. In fact, it's already the technology to make that happen. So the question is, can we make Windows Hello work on the web platform? Yes, the technology to make that happen already exists. And in fact, one of my team is busy building a demo to prove how to do it. So that will come within the next weeks, months. It's pretty close. But yes, you can build a website. Of course, you need the hardware piece, but you can build a website now that uses Passport and therefore uses Hello in order to log in. And that's what we want people doing. That's absolutely what we want people doing. Any other questions? Yeah, sorry. Yeah, signature recognition is a little more difficult because you're looking for security. Well, it depends how secure you need it, right? But one of the ways that we have started to approach this, and I think one of the ways you might think about approaching this is, again, through machine learning systems. Because one of the problems with signatures is when I sign something, it's never the same, right? An X, you know, I've tried to do it the same every time, but I'm only kidding. I do know how to write my name, just. But yeah, it is. It's a difficult problem to solve, and in fact, it's kind of been bypassed by lots of people to just go straight to fingerprint or straight to face recognition or stuff like that. I'm not sure how realistic it is to expect high quality signature recognition. The reality is, signature recognition has never really been high quality, and it's never really been a security mechanism. I know many people whose wives can forge their husband's signature on purpose, shared, very clear, yes, you can sign it for me, because they just can't be bothered. It's not a difficult thing to do. So yeah, it's a challenge that's not really a solved challenge. Any other questions? Hello, yes. I don't know the answer. What I do know is that it's coming and there's not much you can do about it. Different countries have different regulations and some countries may regulate differently and therefore it will be different ways of getting stuff into those places. And in the US, different states have different regulations. So a friend of mine is putting up sensors in Walmarts all over the country, but some states have got different rules and they have to have different setups or different opt-ins, and some states you don't opt in at all, you're just automatically tracked. My gut feeling, and this is a personal response to this, is that we'll get to a point where we just don't care anyway, because the advantage that it gives us is worth the cost. When you start getting stuff that you actually want, rather than ads for, breast enlargement, I really don't need that. When I start getting stuff that's more personal to me and more that I actually want, I'm probably going to be happier with that. And so I think that the right now we're in this position where it's not good enough to actually be worth us wanting to do it, but that will change. And I think what will happen is that it will become so good that we won't want to not have it. And so it will become, things will become so personal that we'll go, yeah, I'm prepared to pay that price. And I think also the culture changes, right? We see different age groups have different acceptance levels of this stuff. And I think the culture of, you know, knowing what's available and what's not available, or exposing everything, changes things as well.
Do you think these discussions are kind of happening relatively high up at Microsoft, or do you think they're already like, forget it, we're just all in on this as it is, as in, it doesn't matter?
Well, I think the conversations are happening in terms of, you know, what is the right thing to do, and, you know, there's very few companies like Microsoft or Apple or Google that are such huge targets for legal compensation. So of course Microsoft is thinking about it at very high levels. No one wants, you know, no one wants Microsoft, no one in Microsoft wants to be sued because we expose something. And that's why we don't share, you know, when you use Windows Hello, we're not sharing anything outside of your machine. So all your biometric data is stored. Well, it's actually not even stored. It's hashed, and then the hash is stored. So we actually not storing anything about you on your machine or in the cloud or anything when we're talking about Windows Hello, for example. I think when we talk about retail experiences and being able to detect different types of people, right now the acceptable level is anonymized. So I know that there's a male who's in his 40s who's walked into the store. I don't know who it is. Right, but that gives me a whole bunch of things that I could start thinking about if I'm a, you know, if I'm a Microsoft retail store, for example. I got a male in his 40s. What kind of stuff might he be interested in that I can, you know, recommend to him? But I don't think we're going beyond that right now. But that will start to happen. To what degree, I don't know. And you know, what's interesting is when you start putting these kiosks that are very much opt-in. People have to go up to them and touch them and take their own picture. And then opt in to share on Facebook. Everyone's doing it, right? But it's busy. And so people are constantly engaged and willing to share the fact that they've been to a location and that it's them and that it thinks that they're 107 or 6 years old or whatever. I'll be honest with you. When we built that kiosk, one of the things we did think about doing was putting gender, because we can detect gender with reasonable accuracy. But we took that out because it's more offensive to get someone's gender wrong than it is to get their age wrong. There are it's a line, and you work out, you know, where you want to cross it, or not, as the case may be. But yeah, that's a huge conversation. Any other questions? Yep. Sure. Yep. The second question. Okay, so first question, safety for HoloLens. HoloLens is a controlled environment technology right now. There's no doubt about that. I would not put a HoloLens on someone's head and put them out in the road or have them driving a car while wearing HoloLens. That would be stupid. HoloLens also is, you know, the holograms are, to some degree, they will have some degree of transparency to them. So you can see through things. You're not creating a virtual world that is totally obstructing the real world. In fact, it's augmenting or mixing with the real world. And so that's a slightly different way of looking at it, and means that you always see what's happening in the real world when you're wearing HoloLens. So I don't really have a lot of concerns around that right now. mostly because it's not a product that anyone can get, so it doesn't really make any difference. But even when it becomes a product that people can get, all those problems have really been addressed and considered. It is a controlled environment product. I don't think it's going to be something that you go into, you know, just random spaces and put something on your head and walk around. It will be, you know, you'll be doing a job. It's a product where you will have it on for a specific reason, and that job will, you know, encompass within that space. You never can. You know, people build viruses with computers, so, you know, you can't control what people do, but you can provide guidance as to, you know, what the usable environments are. The second question, which is about reliability of new input mechanisms, I think that's a done deal. People are already talking to their phones. People already go, Siri, tell me this. Cortana, tell me this. Speech is already a done deal. That's game over on that one. We already know people have devices in the marketplace that are speech only and becoming incredibly successful. When it comes to handwriting recognition, maybe a little bit different, and everyone's different. There are some people that really love to be able to scribble notes and brainstorm mind map using ink, and that's a more powerful mechanism for them to capture information. Giving them tools that do that in a rich way, sure, that's reliable. Giving them tools that do that are already available and have been available for 10 years. OneNote and ink, you know, with active styluses is not a new thing. Things like measuring people as they're walking through spaces, is that reliable? Well, we already know it's not super reliable right now, but we're getting better almost daily. The number of uploads into the machine learning systems is just increasing, and it's astronomical how fast. Like, if you look at how old .NET, how fast it got to 1 million users was insane. Like, you know, there's just over 500 million people photos have been engaged with how old .NET. That's an incredibly high number. So, yeah, it gets better daily. To answer that question, it's a range, and the more mature the technology, of course, the more reliable it is. So I think I'm being told that I need to wrap up now. I've got someone at the back of the room waving at me. So thank you very much. I hope you learned something.